Colleagues, welcome back to the office. It's Steve. Welcome to episode 21 of the CPE Today podcast. Our presentation and podcast for you today is Excel Tables, a not-so-hidden feature, which will save you time, part three. Tables, as if you've been paying attention and following along with this presentation, is one of my absolute favorite things inside of Excel. They're such a useful tool for organization of data, making data easier to work with, writing formulas, filtering, sorting, and just about everything else. And it's a feature that I do not see enough people actually using with respect to organization of their data. I see people, when they send me their spreadsheets or if I'm peering over their shoulders, going out of their way to make their lives more difficult. When if they were to use a table, the structuring of their information, the writing of their formulas would be a snap. It would be something that would be so simple, so easy, and so efficient that they're honestly making it more difficult for themselves by not using tables. So in this series, we have been looking at all the different things that you can do. We started off with different ways of creating tables, and we'll review a couple of major key points of the features and functions thereof. In the last episode, we took a look at how we can sort and filter our information correctly. And that not only applies to tables, but really kind of all areas inside of Excel, whether you're working with a pivot table or a chart. In today's episode, what we are going to be looking at are structured references inside of Excel using tables. Structured references are the way that we write formulas and the way that we reference data in and out of a table inside of Excel, whether we're writing a formula, whether we're using it as an argument inside of a formula, whether we're using it for a chart, whether we're using it as a data source for a pivot table. This will be the way that we will structure how we refer to the data inside of that table. So we'll talk about all the different things that you need to know to utilize structured references correctly and how they function. Then we're going to talk about how we utilize tables as sources for other things inside of Excel. A table can be a source, and often it's a precursor functionality to something else that we choose to do. So we might use ultimately a pivot table, but the way that we're going to load that data into that pivot table is from a table. And in fact, you should do that 100% of the time, and I'll talk about why in a little bit. So we can use a table as a precursor for a pivot table, for a pivot chart, a chart, Power View, and lots of other things, including Power Query tool, one of my next absolute favorite function inside of Excel. We'll also talk about some of the other really kind of cool things that come with using Excel tables, such as the Fuzzy Lookup tool, which is an additional component that you can get for free, F-R-E-E, from Microsoft, which is a different way of referencing and looking up data inside of Excel. It's really cool if you have imperfect data. And I'm going to show you how that functions and what that does as we get through our presentation here today. But there is no limit in terms of what functionality we can use with tables inside of Excel. They are truly incredible and astounding, and something that you should be using every step of the way. Now, before we get going, I do want to remind you that if you are a financial professional, you can earn credit for listening to today's podcast, whether you're listening live or after the fact on the platform of your choosing. And as a reminder, we are available on Apple Podcasts. We're available on Google Podcasts, Spotify, and others. I had a listener actually write in to me and say, hey, would you mind being listed on Pocket Casts earlier in the week? And I said, sure, not a problem. So if you're a new listener and you find us on Pocket Casts, you can check us all of our new episodes out there as well. But you can't earn CPE credit for listening to today's podcast. It is super, super simple. After you've listened to today's broadcast, head on over to cpetoday.com. Use course code ECX3. Take a short quiz and you will earn a credit for today's podcast, and you'll be well on your way for maintaining your professional licensing. I myself am coming up for renewal here at the end of May, and it's incredible how quickly your renewal can pop up and you might find yourself short credits. Well, this is a great, easy, efficient way that you can continue to earn credits doing something you're probably already doing, which is listening to podcasts or watching videos on YouTube. So again, you can earn a credit by going to cpetoday.com, use course code ECX3, and you can earn a credit just by listening or watching on the platform of your choosing. All right, without further ado, let's go ahead and get right into it. And let's go ahead and start discussing our presentation for today, which is going to be Excel data tables. Now, let's just do a quick refresher here with respect to what a data table is in Excel, okay? In a nutshell, a data table in Excel is a container for data inside of the Excel workbook, okay? It is a collection of rows and columns, and rows and columns being a collection of cells. It's a way that we will organize and then reference our data inside of Excel. It's super useful, but you can use it, as I mentioned, as a precursor of other Excel functionality. And we're going to explore that specifically here today. And in fact, if you're creating a pivot table, you're creating a chart or graph, often the best practice will be to create an Excel table first and foremost. It is really efficient with respect to referencing your data. And really, it's nothing different than what you're already doing. It's a more efficient way of operating. If you're like me, you're always looking at ways to save a minute here, a minute there. That adds up a lot. And often, if you look back at the end of the week, month, and year, you know, these little quick things can often add up to a large cost savings, and, you know, often will be a more improved way of operating that you did previously. Now, data tables have some specific features that we should be familiar with. Okay. They are fantastic for easy and quick formatting inside of our Excel workbooks. They will often do, for example, the header row, the summary row, and the column formatting, whether we want to do banded columns, banded rows, in terms of understanding and being able to find better contrast of our data. They make our data pop and easy. They're fantastic for dynamic data sets. And often as we start to look at more advanced functionality, like for example, with Power Query, our data sets will grow and expand. You know, they will include new data a month from now. You know, if we think about the work that we're doing month in, month out, let's just say we're doing a credit card reconciliation or a bank reconciliation. Well, there's new transactions often being added seemingly every day, maybe even every hour, depending on the nature of our business. Tables will grow dynamically to accept new data. Now, when we talk about using tables as a precursor for a pivot table or a precursor for a chart or a graph or Power View or other things like that, the fact that they can dynamically resize as new data is added is wonderful because we don't have to redefine the scope of what we're working with. If we're working with a table and the data is in the table, we get new records, great. It expands, and then therefore the pivot table expands, the chart expands. We save ourselves a step in terms of having to go back into that specific chart, graph, or pivot table and add those additional columns that go below it. Okay. Structured references. We're going to dive into that deeply. It's a better way of writing formulas. It's a better way of understanding the data inside of our workbook. Okay. Easily filter and source. We talked about that in episode 2 of this series. And we talked about every possible way that you could sort and filter your data using a table. It replicates formulas, which is something we'll talk about here. As we add new data, it will automatically continue that formula if it is consistent throughout the column, which makes it great for, again, dynamic data sets. It'll automatically add summary rows. It'll do the totaling, the averaging, all that stuff for us as well. Now, we are going to save this last very juicy morsel of information for our next broadcast here, where we're going to talk about data modeling, but we will touch upon it a little bit. Data modeling inside of Excel is the next generation of reporting in a lot of ways. We can essentially tell Excel to treat the data like a quasi-database, and it's stored in a similar way to the way the data is stored. And the benefit of this being is that with that, we can query the data. We can structure references to the data. We can use the data for more complicated and complex analysis where we need to look at larger data sets. It allows us to use more advanced tools such as Power BI and Power View and Power Query and Power Pivot as part of that. And a lot of that will be based on the fact that we will be using data modeling in order to be able to bring that data together. Okay. So without further ado, let's just go ahead and dive into our first section for today, which are going to be discussing the references inside of Excel and how we'll actually structure. Now, majority of today's podcast is going to be in Excel itself. So if you're listening, you might want to switch to YouTube so you can watch some of the screen shares and get a sense of what we're looking at here. And if you're following along, I'll do my best to kind of narrate through it. But we're not going to be in PowerPoint that much today. We are going to be mostly in Excel hands-on with this. Okay. Now, I actually do want to draw your attention first so that we can understand traditional way of writing references versus the way that we would write references inside of Excel going forward. Okay. So what we have here is an example of a traditional approach as well as the structured reference approach. And traditionally with Excel, we're using what's called the R1C1 column approach. Okay. Now, what we do with this is that we have columns that are alphabet based. So A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, you know, and so on and so forth. You can have up to, I think it's 16,000 columns inside of your Excel workbook. So it very easily can get into the triple letters and go beyond that as well. And we have our row numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, so on and so forth. In general with Excel, our data should be going down rather than across. That's the tabular data box. Model. Ideally, the columns should be describing the records in the row itself. So when we're thinking about referencing things inside of Excel, we want to reference them by columns and then whatever row number would be the record that we would be looking for. So if we were trying to add things together in the traditional approach, it would be something like this. If we wanted to sum the records between column D and row 4 to column D and row 17, well, that's how we would reference it, by address, by position, relative to the workbook in terms of what we are working with here. Now, we could also throw in, if we were doing a reference on another worksheet, we would have the worksheet name in front of this and then an exclamation mark, so on and so forth. Okay. And this is referencing it by cellular position. Nothing wrong, nothing inherently bad about this. But one of the things that does require us to have is an understanding of where the data is located in that Excel workbook in advance. Okay. So I, as the viewer, as the person putting together this workbook, would have to already know that maybe column D represents our sales figures or our cost figures. If I am the casual user, or if I'm picking up this workbook, you know, a couple of weeks or longer after the fact, often I have to refamiliarize myself with where and how that data is being stored inside of Excel. I can't have kind of an immediate approach and understanding of this data by just looking at the formula itself. And this can be a problem. The bigger the workbook gets, the more worksheets that get added, things can get lost pretty quickly. Now, if your simple workbooks, your one-off analysis, nothing inherently wrong with doing this. However, if we work with the structured reference approach, the tabular approach, the table approach, in my opinion, this becomes a lot easier to work with, okay? Because a table, at the end of the day, is a container of data. We can call those containers more friendly names, and they become a lot easier to understand. Okay. And we're going to break down all the specific things you need to know to reference data inside of tables, specifically the syntax and the order of operations for it. But let's just say this exact formula written not in the R1C1 formula approach or the cellular address approach, but rather with the table approach could look something like this. Let's say we wanted to sum that column of D. Well, if that column of D was in the sales table and we were looking at the April month, well, it would look something like this. It would say sum, go to the sales table, column of April, and sum that entire column together. So imagine you are somebody who doesn't have an existing frame of reference with this data. Imagine you maybe wrote it, but it was a long time ago. Well, what's easier to understand? Summing the month of April's sales or columns D4, D17 and summing it that way? So that is kind of the difference between this. The cellular approach works off of the position of the workbook and where the cells themselves are located in a physical address versus the structured reference tabular approach works off the name of the table and the column of where it is positioned in that way. Now, if we look at and we go and we try to understand, for example, the positioning of everything here in terms of how we will write that formula, there are a couple specific things that we need to know. Okay, there are the components of this. We have table names, we have column specifiers, we have any sort of special specifiers, more on that in a moment here, and then we have any sort of additional operations that we choose to do here. Okay, so the first thing that we need to know is the table name. Okay, when we go to create our table, that table will have a name. By default, that for the first table of the workbook that you're creating, that will be table one. The second table will be table two, table three, so on and so forth. I want you to get into the habit. The best practice of this is to go and rename your table the second you create it. And you can call it whatever you want. There are some general loose rules in terms of what you would need and how you would need to name this. It's not that hard. You can't, for example, give it a name that could be confused with the position of something inside of the workbook. So you couldn't call it like tax 2020 or something like that. It has to, I believe, start with a... It has to start with a letter, and then you can use some numbers and other stuff like that. It can't contain spaces, or if it does contain spaces, you have to reference it then with double quotes. You know, so generally what I recommend with table names, and this is just my best practice, give it a friendly, convenient, memorable name representative of what the data is. So if it's sales, call it sales or sales info. If it's cost or cost info, something like that. It could be sales 2020, something of that nature. I generally recommend keep them all tight. Don't use spaces inside of it and just kind of keep them simple. You can have up to, I believe, 256 characters on a table name. So you can be quite descriptive, but generally it's best to keep it simple. The next are going to be your column specifiers. I want to point out they're not column names. We call them column specifiers. Okay. That is the specific columns that you'd like to work with. Okay. Now, when you go to create your table, the first thing it asks you, hey, do you want to use headers? The answer is yes. You always want to use headers. There's not a single instance that I can think of where you would not want a header row. So before you go to create your table, first make sure that you give it a header, and then inside of that header, give it something meaningful. So like a date, an ID, call it something that is reflective of the data inside of that column, and make sure that you keep that column data type consistent. If it's an order date, great. Keep it as an order date. Don't include the order total or the customer ID. Columns are single purpose. Cells are single purpose. Keep the column itself specific. Okay. And then we also have these special item specifiers. Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about what those special item specifiers are. Okay. Now, when we go to write our formula that's going to reference data inside of a table, okay, we're going to reference the table name, and then we can reference the columns, and then we can also have to use some of these special specifiers as well to get specific aspects about the table that might be useful for us. For example, if we use the specifier pound all, well, this will get the entire thing, including columns and row totals. By default, we're really only working with data most of the time. So if we wanted to include, when we're referencing something, the headers and the summary row, well, we'd use that pound all, and it would include everything, including those headers and that summary or total row below it. Now, if we only want to get the data, specifically excluding the header row and excluding the summary row, we use pound data. And this will only extract the data in the table, specifically excluding our header and total. If we just want to get our headers, we can say pound headers and it will just get the header row. Or we could use pound totals and it will just get the total or summary row if one exists. Okay. Now, there are some special circumstances. This row, we also have the at sign that are great when we're referencing stuff in the current row of what we are looking for. Okay, typically we're going to use the at sign. That is a better term than pound this row. That was used in the older versions of Excel. It's still supported, but the at sign is a heck of a lot faster and easier to write and a lot easier to work with. So let's go ahead and take a look at what this might look like in terms of how we might structure some of these references and how we might be able to use structured references inside of Excel. Okay, so... Alrighty. So I want to remind you, if you have purchased today's course from cpetoday.com, you also get access to all the sample materials and sample files. And there's about 10 or so that we're going to be taking a look at throughout the course. And if we don't get through everything, you can always reference them in the book yourself. But you do get some, I do provide sample files that look at all these different things today and that you can try for yourself to get a sense. And the book and the sample files are very complementary to each other. When you see figure 45, 46, well, that will reference back to a sample file or part of the book. So you can kind of get a sense of what each of these sections do. So let's first talk about what it might look like to reference some things inside of our Excel. Now, you should know there's an explicit way of writing a formula and an implicit way of writing the formula itself. If we're in the table itself, we do not need to reference the name of the table. We only need to reference the name of the table if we are outside of that. Let me give you a quick example of what this looks like. Let's say we wanted to calculate sales tax or impute sales tax based off of that sales column. I'm going to create a new Actually, I'm going to give myself one more blank column here because I don't want it to auto expand into that other table. Okay. Let's make this a little bit tighter. Here we go. And let's add a column over here and we'll call it sales tax collected, like that. Okay, notice again, it auto expands. Now, if I'm inside of the table, I can implicitly refer to the other columns inside of this. And the way it would work would be equal sign to start the formula and a square bracket. Okay. Anytime you're working with table data, a dead giveaway that you are working with table data is going to be that square bracket. And that square bracket, if I am inside of that table, you'll see that it will auto populate and give me a nice little drop down menu here showing me the names of that other column. This is your best friend. Okay. So you can have, as you can see here, a sales tax collected has some spaces in it. That's a nice, easy way of providing some documentation for yourself. And instead of having to write that whole thing out yourself, you can just tab down to it like that, and you can reference that specific column. And I'm going to use a closed bracket there, and you'll notice it highlights that whole column that we're in, indicating that is the column, in fact, that we are going to work with. Okay. In our particular instance, let's go ahead and use the sales column there, end bracket, and then let's just say maybe 5.5%. So we'll do 0.055 like this. Okay. And we're going to go ahead and hit enter here and there we go. Okay. And you'll notice that it will auto-complete that formula out. Now, when I did that auto-complete, it gave me a quick error message saying, hey, did you want to refer to the whole total or row by row? Well, I want to do row by row. And that's an example real quick of where those special operators can pop up. Okay, so if we look at this, what this literally says is current row sales times 5.5%. And so what the Excel will do is it'll go to the sales column, the current row, in this case, row 6, take that number times 5.5%, getting us our number there. Okay. So if we're in the table itself, we do not need to reference the name of the table. We can just, in fact, reference the column, in fact, that we are working with. And as long as we use those square brackets, we'll see those pop up easily for us. Alrighty. So let's go ahead and talk about explicit and maybe take a look at some other examples in terms of what we can do. All right, let's square ourselves up here a little bit. And I've over here got a listing of all the different operators, most of which we will not be covering, but the overall way that we do this will be roughly the same. Okay. Now, when you go to create a table, I always want you to get in the habit of giving that table a name. Again, the first one you create will be table 1, and then it will expand to table 2, 3, 4, so on and so forth thereafter. Now, where we give that table a name is up here in the table design menu. This menu is only accessible when you're in a table. Notice when I'm not in the table, that table design menu goes away. If we click in, boom, it's right there. We can grab it. Let's click that table design and you'll see, for example, we have the name sales info 4 listed. Okay. The table name will always be in the upper left-hand corner of that table design. It's the first thing listed in there. And just give that name, a name that is meaningful to you. Alrighty. And I do recommend that you keep that one word starting with alpha. And then if you choose to use numerics, great, go ahead. Okay. So let's say, for example, we wanted to get the total of all sales of this particular column. Here's our salespeople. And ideally what we're going to try to get here is this 342,125,03 number. Okay, well, let's just write that as a simple sales example. So we are going to go ahead and start with our formula. So we're going to head and say equals sum. Okay. And then as we would start to go and write this formula using the table, we would reference the name of the table, in this case, sales info 4. And we'll see that pop up right here. Okay. Now, by default, if we just use sales info 4 listed here, it means the whole thing. You know, and if we were to just try to sum this, we're not going to get the number that we're looking for. You know, we get 347,1489, which in fact is all of these numbers listed together. We want to be a little bit more specific with it. So, but since we're out of the table, the way that we would do this would be inside of that formula, we reference the name of the table, and then we use that square bracket to tell it a specific column, in this case, sales, like that. And if we go ahead and click that, we get that 342,120,503, same number listed right here, because that operation is including that table in that column. If we added another column here, and let's just go ahead and do it as an example, or not another column, but another row. Okay. Let's just say it was Steve Yass. Okay. And we'll just copy the row from above. Okay. We're going to see that value go up as well. If this changes, we'd see that changed as well. So that's what's kind of nice about this. If it's dynamic, in the case that it is, new values get added to that sales column. We're going to see those values automatically updated in that formula without having to go back and say, hey, you know what? It didn't end on row 28. It ended on row 29, so on and so forth. All right, let's roll back our changes a little bit here. Okay. Now, we can reference and do kind of other things with this as well. Let's say, for example, in this instance, let's say we wanted to add cells B28 and C28 to the total for sales and commission. You know, so if we wanted to get a sense of, let's say over here, our sales and commission numbers and add those two numbers together, well, we can do that as well. Okay, this is where those special operators start coming into play. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and add these two numbers. So we're going to go ahead and say sales info 4. Okay, we're going to use two open brackets in this particular instance. So we're going to use a special operator. In this case, we're going to tell it to use the total. Well, which total do we want to use? We want to use the sales total. Okay, this can kind of be confusing for folks that haven't used tables before, but this formula right here, sales info 4 totals sales, correlates to this number listed right here. And so that's how we can use a special operator to get a specific total if we wanted to. Okay. And then we're just going to use a plus sign and we're going to use that same sales info 4. Okay. We're going to go ahead and use the total special operator. And then we're going to go ahead and say our commissions table. Come on. There we go. And likewise, we get that listed here, and that 347,489 is in fact those two numbers added together. Pretty nifty if you ask me. Okay. So we can often use any combination of these things to find data inside of our tables for whatever purposes that we might need. We just need to know the name of the table and then the name of the columns that in fact we are working with. Okay, later on, and I'm not going to cover this then, but I'll cover it now. We can also use this, for example, for any aspect of any formula operation that we would like. Okay, let's say, for example, we wanted to go and do a lookup and we wanted to find the sales number for Adams here. Okay, well, lookup has four arguments: what you're looking up, where you're looking up, what you'd like back, and whether or not you want a an exact match or an approximate match. Anywhere that we would normally reference the position of something, we instead can use the table name or in combination table name and columns for that as well. So let's say we wanted to do a VLOOKUP to find our sales number here for Adams. Well, we can do equals VLOOKUP. What do we want to look up? Well, in this case, I want to look up Adams. Okay, where am I going to look it up? This would normally be where we would put in our cellular position of where that would be. Okay, but instead we're going to go ahead and say, hey, go look this up to sales info 4. What do we want to get back? We want to get back column 2, which would be the sales amount. And we're going to get an exact match. So we'll say false. And in fact, there we go with this. So that is where and how you would use a VLOOKUP and use a tabular reference inside of this. You just substitute, in this particular instance, for the table array, the name of the table that you would like. All other circumstances around VLOOKUP all remain. They're all there. Nothing changes in that particular respect. We just change the instead of referencing the cell position, we reference the name of where that table is located and then anywhere that that might specifically be. So if we wanted, for example, in an index and match to use a specific column, great. Table name, open bracket, column name for what we would be looking for. And so that works out pretty easily. All righty, let's go ahead and have a polling question. All righty. Okay. So a table specifier is the outer portion of the structured reference that is enclosed in blank of the following table name. Okay. So if we were writing a reference to something inside of Excel using tables, what syntax would we use? What would we use to represent that, structured reference? Okay. Would we use quotes? No, that would not be what we would use with respect to our, referencing things in a tables. Quotes are used exclusively to reference, text inside of Excel. So we would use quotes for straight text in Excel. Would we use parentheses? No, we would not use parentheses. That is what we would use specifically for formula operations. Okay. So when we're writing a formula, sum, subtotal, so on and so forth, well, where we would use that would be in a formula. So that's when we would use that. Would it be curly brackets? No, those are exclusively for array formulas, dynamic formulas that grow and expand based off of the conditions. So think of your filter, your unique, your sort, things of this nature. We would not use that. Anytime we are referencing anything inside of a table, it is always square brackets. And square brackets are what we would use to reference for our tables inside of Excel. So if you see square brackets, then you know that is what you are looking for. Okay, so structured references inside of Excel, in my opinion, are just the absolute best way of doing anything inside of Excel because of the dynamic nature of what we do. And often our data sets are growing and expanding. And so one of the nice things about that is that tables will grow and expand with that. And we don't have to go back and update all of our formulas just to support one more row of data for something else. Okay. Let's also talk about a couple other things with respect to references. Alrighty, give me one second here. Let me just go ahead and flip back over here. Okay, now one of the other things that we can do inside of Excel using structured references is that we can also use the headers for other things as well. Normally, tables treat all column headers, including dates, as text strings. And normally it doesn't kind of create any major issues for building formulas inside of tables. But if you plan on using a column header to behave like a number or date, you need to kind of make some additional adjustments. Let's say you wanted to, for example, use these for referencing, you know, inside of a formula itself. Well, it's not too difficult to be able to do this. So in this particular instance, let's say, for example, we were building a fixed asset registry and we wanted to know whether or not that particular item was purchased in a specific year. Okay. Now, what we can do here is that we can reference and look at the column header to determine if, you know, in fact, that item was acquired in that year or not. Okay. And because Excel will always treat these things as a header, as text, we would always see that item fail. So as an example here, here is an example of this. And so we've got some equipment that we have acquired here. And let's just say, did we acquire this in 2016? Okay, well, I've got our simple example of a formula listed here. I'm just going to copy this over here to the right, just so you can kind of see it. Okay. And what we're doing here with this particular formula is that we are running the year function. Okay. And we're comparing and we're getting the year out of our acquisition date, in this case, 2016. And then we're comparing it to the header of 2016 to see if that is correct. And if we execute this formula, you're going to see all of these will return false. Okay. Now, why is it returning false? Well, it's returning false because by default, any headers inside of Excel are treated as text. Now, if you plan on using your header row as a value for some sort of calculation, what you need to do very simply is just add the value function to the beginning of that formula. Okay, so let's go ahead and run that formula again here. Okay, you see they all return false. But if we come on over here and we add the word value to this, the value formula will tell Excel, if you see something that could be a number, but you're treating it like text, the value formula says, you know what, go ahead and treat it like a number rather than treating it like text. So that's a quick tip if you plan on using your headers for like VLOOKUPs, index match, other things like that, and they're numeric and that you want to be able to use them. Well, you got to run that value formula in order to be able to treat it like a number. Okay. And that's true of anywhere inside of Excel. Okay. So let's go ahead and move on to the next section of what we are going to go ahead and talk about today. And that next section will be using Excel as a data source for other things inside of Excel. So we can use a table as a data source for a lot of different things. And we're going to take a look at what this would look like, for example, using a chart and graph, as well as with pivot tables and other things like that. Okay. Now, one of the beautiful things about this, I've said it several times now, is the fact that they will grow and expand depending on what your data set is. So using a table as a source for this is wonderful because it will continue to include additional items without you really kind of having to do anything around it. And the good news is it really doesn't require any additional work with respect to how you create your table. The way you created your table previously will totally continue to work using that particular table method. In fact, it's a little bit easier. So I want to kind of show you an example here of how we would go ahead and do this. And we're going to go ahead and create a simple chart. Then we're going to create a pivot chart, our pivot table, and then we'll create a pivot chart from there. So we're going to do three different things with this. Okay, so here is an example of our simple data, and here are the charts that I want to show you how to create. And I'm going to show you the standard way of what this would look like, and you know, this is the chart we're going to create, and then we're going to kind of create a cooler chart, which is a chart on two axes, so kind of give you a sense of what this data will look like, okay? Now, if this data wasn't table data, it wouldn't really make a big difference because the way we create charts is the same no matter what. Okay. Now it is a little bit simpler. All we have to do is put our active cell somewhere inside of that table. And then from the insert menu, we're going to come over here right smack dab in the middle. And we're going to see we have recommended charts listed here. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and click that recommended charts. And because it is a table, it immediately knows where that data starts and stops. And it's also smart enough to know, hey, don't include the total row to obscure the data. If we physically make this include that total row down there, if it wasn't a chart, we would see these items really skewed because we never ever want to create our chart based off of those totals. We always want to just include that raw data. So let's just go ahead and create a simple clustered chart here. And let's just go ahead and list this. Okay. And we can see that it does in fact create our chart. And if we turn off our total row, let's go ahead and do that. And let's add a new record. Okay. So let's go ahead and add Yas as an example here. We see that that record automatically expands. And so Steve had a killer year. He did $26 million. Dollars in sales. There we go. And let's just say his commission was a fitting, let's say $540,000. Man, that would be great, wouldn't it? Okay. And so we could see that those new records will automatically get included from that chart. Now, this is a good thing to know with respect to creating charts. Charts treat numbers literally in terms of what they are. And in this particular instance, we're comparing two things at two vastly different scales. We see, for example, over here, a 14 million compared to 170. Well, what ends up happening in that particular instance? Well, because it's treating both numbers the same, well, we end up with a really big column and something that is very small. Ideally, we'd want to be able to see these numbers on their own to be able to compare sales against sales and commissions against commissions. Here's a quick tip in terms of when you go to create your chart, which again is no different than creating a chart any other time. Okay. One of the things you can do if you're comparing two things that are very different in terms of scale is you can use a chart on two different axes. Okay. Let's give our chart a little quick name here. And let's just say our sales and commissions for 2021. Okay. And let's actually change some of the specifics of this chart itself. Okay. Let me just go ahead and drop my camera here for a second so you can see the full screen. Okay. And what we're going to do is we're going to select this chart here and we're going to come up here to our menu and we're going to choose the item that says change chart type. Okay. And in selecting this, okay, one of the things that we can choose to do here is that we can come down here to our combo. Okay. And this is a combination chart. When we select the combination chart, what's kind of cool about this is that we can set this to be a chart on two different axes. So we'll click this combo here and you'll see that it's got our chart listed. Okay. And we've got our sales and commission both being represented here, but we also have an option here on the right that says secondary axis. Okay. Watch what happens if we click this. Okay. And we'll click okay. Now we have a chart showing it on two different axes. We can see the lines represent the sales volume. And then that line, I'm sorry, the bar represents the sales volume and that line represents their commission. Now we could change this as well. For example, we could come back in here and instead of putting this on a line chart, we could do it with a, for example, stacked with markers if we want. We could have it as an area chart. We can do it as a XY chart, which is probably the better way of demonstrating this. Okay. And then from here, what we can do over here on the right-hand side is format our data a little bit better. You know, so if we want to maybe, for example, change some of the colors or formats, maybe we want to, for example, make those a little bit thicker and a little bit bigger. Oops, not like that. Okay. And maybe we want to, come over here and maybe change the color, maybe make those black, maybe make that a little bit easier to pop. Come on. There we go. Hold on. Honestly, getting into the nitty gritty of charts can be so specific in terms of what you, in terms of what you do. But on the right-hand side here, this is going to be where all of our different options are. And I ideally want to make this marker just a little bit bigger. So let's try this. There we go. Our width. Oh, wrong way. There we go. All right. Well, I guess the outline of that was red, but the point of this being is that we can adjust that to make that a little bit better and easier for what we would like it to be. So let's see. Yeah, well, there we go. That kind of gives us an idea of a chart on two axes. And so now we can actually easily compare our sales amount with our commission. And we can kind of get a sense of, you know, maybe Steve here has the highest commission, but also has the highest sales. And we can see that's probably out of line. One other quick tip that you can do here that's kind of cool is that you could also, for example, put a trend line on this as well. So if we wanted to see a trend on our sales or on our commission, we can kind of get a sense of what that is. And we could maybe, for example, want to get a trend line on our commission, you know, to kind of get a sense of generally where the commission's going. And in this sense, we can see that they are, in fact, skewing up. Okay, so that is creating a chart from a table, no different. Now let's talk about creating a pivot table from our data. Okay, to go to create our pivot table, very, very simple in terms of what we would do for this. Okay, and lots of different ways that we can actually do this. Okay, we can use the standard keyboard shortcuts for creating a pivot table. We can come up here to the insert menu and select pivot table in the upper left. Okay, listed right there. If we are in our table design menu, okay, we also get the opportunity to create our pivot table. You'll see here in the upper left, summarized with pivot table listed. Okay, now we do have a separate series from CP Today just on pivot tables, and we're going to expand all sorts of pivot table functionality in this. So we're not going to go into depth with respect to how to create pivot tables other than to express how we would create them in the context of using a table, but it's very simple. Okay. All the normal stuff creating a pivot table still applies. One big added difference is that when we go to create our pivot table, you'll notice that instead of showing you the data source as being the tabular reference where that data starts and stops, it instead gives us the table name, in this case, sales info. And again, what's beautiful about this is if that data grows, we don't have to redefine the scope of that pivot table. If it's in the scope of the table, if it's in sales info, automatically it will be included in the pivot table itself. Okay, all we have to do is refresh the data. So it says sales info, we'll go ahead and click okay. It's gonna create a new worksheet for us and we can start to go and create our pivot table just like we would any other way. We'll pull our salesperson down here. We'll pull our sales over here to values. We will go ahead and pull our commission over here to values and we have now created our pivot table. Maybe give it a little bit of formatting here, make it look a little bit nicer. And there you go. That is creating a pivot table from the table data. Now, if we come over here to our pivot table analyze, and you'll see you have your option here that says change data source. If this was not a pivot table and we added a new row, we'd have to click this change data source and we would have to include in here that additional row for that new record or new column if we were adding a new descriptor for that record. Let's go ahead and add a new column here. Okay, and let's just add. Let's just go ahead and add a column and we'll call it sales tax collected. Okay, and let's just impute our sales tax again. So we'll use our at sign. We're gonna use our sales figure like this. There you go. So it's using the current row. And let's just go ahead and do our 0.055. And there you go. We get our tax imputed automatically. Okay. And let's come back over here to our pivot table. Okay. You'll notice that that new column is not included in that pivot table. Okay. All we have to do is either from the data tab, select refresh all, or from the pivot table analyze, click refresh. Either one will work totally fine. And what it does is it reconnects back to that data source and says, you got anything new or different for me? And if we click that, we'll see that new sales tax collected column added there. And we can easily add it to our pivot table without having to go and tell it something is different. If we, for example, delete that column, okay, so it goes away just like it did there. And we go ahead and refresh this data again. You'll see that that column goes away as well. Okay, so it's a great way. And you should always create a table before creating your pivot table. Okay, last thing in terms of creating our creating a pivot chart from our table data. Same thing. We can come over here to our insert menu and insert on the middle where our charts are. Instead, we'll see pivot chart. We can click it there. And there is also a, well, I guess that's the only place we can do it. So let's go ahead and click our pivot chart. Now, same principles creating a pivot table. It's going to connect to the table. Any new or changed records will be included as well. Okay. Now, when we go to create a pivot chart, we're creating a pivot table at the same time. So if we take our salespeople down here, we go ahead and put this on our axis and we take our sales, we go ahead and put this over here to our values, we will see that pivot chart being created at the same time our pivot table is. We'll pull our commissions over here to our values as well. Now, the one thing I will point out with respect to creating your pivot chart, one of the things that you should know is not every chart type is supported in every in pivot charts. Not every chart type you can use. Some of them you can, though, which is kind of nice. And only recently they started supporting the combo chart. Previously, they did not. But it'll tell you, for example, if you try to go and create something, hey, whatever you're trying to do here, this is not supported. You can't create this type of chart with a pivot table. Got to select something different. But they're all listed here. You can go ahead and select whatever chart type you'd like. You know, just be conscious of, for example, which chart is going to best highlight that data. But it is no different than creating a chart, no different than creating a pivot table. So that is using a chart as a or using a table as a data type for something else. Let's go ahead and have another review question here. Alrighty. Which of the following statements about creating charts from tables is false? Okay, so which one is not true? Okay, you are limited to building a single chart from a table. That is absolutely false. You can create as many charts as your heart desires from a table. So you can have one table and have 20 charts. So that is the correct answer here in the sense of you what is false. So some of the other things that you can do that are true here, you can add more data to the table and automatically expands. Yes, absolutely. You can do that. Building the chart from a table is straightforward. Yes, either one of those would be true in terms of what you're doing. Alrighty. So let's go ahead and take a look at our next section here, which is going to be utilizing some of the more advanced capabilities of tables itself. Okay. Now, I'm not covering every single thing that's in the actual materials of the book. I'm covering the stuff I think it would be most interesting. And as such, feel free, check out cptoday.com. Again, use course code ECX3, and you can check out the stuff I'm not going to be discussing today, because there is so much more with tables that you can do that, unfortunately, we just don't have enough time to refer to. Okay, in the time that we do have left, I want to talk about a really cool functionality that is not widely known, which is the Excel fuzzy lookup functionality. The fuzzy lookup functionality inside of Excel is what we can do when we want to do a lookup, but we have inexact information that we are working with. Okay, now, what we have here is a listing of our, let's just call it salespeople and their compensation, okay? And in a lot of businesses, you know, we've got data that's being managed by different people, certainly with different systems, and having data that is congruent and consistent can often be very, very, very difficult. And in a lot of organizations, just because, you know, your name is written in one system one way doesn't mean that it's going to be the consistent way everywhere. Okay. And if we're doing Excel, you know, doing lookups, we have to work with exact things. Lookups, VLOOKUP, index and match, XLOOKUP work best off of keys. So in invoice ID, check number, social security number, stuff of that nature. And if we don't have a key and we're using something that's imperfect, like a name for that matter, well, your mileage will vary. Okay. So in this example, what we have here on the left is data coming from our HR system. We have the names of our employees in one column. We have their social security number in another column. And on the right, our other table listed here, we have data from payroll. Okay. So we have the name of the employee and their compensation. Okay. I'm the controller here. We need to go ahead and create our W-2s for the years to pay our, so our staffs can file their tax returns. Okay. And because I have two different departments with two different systems, we run into instances where the names are not the same. Okay. And this could be really hard for a lot of people in terms of being able to, you know, you want to make sure it's right. It's very important. You know, as an example here in our HR system, our staff member, Jan Costas, her name is Jan Costas listed here, but in payroll, they do it last name, first name. So over here we have Costas Jan in this particular instance. Okay. What would happen if I wanted to consolidate this information into a single table where I have the name of the employee, their social security number, and compensation? Well, traditionally, the way I would handle that would be through some sort of lookup. So let's just go ahead and do a lookup here and see if we can match the data on the left to the data on the right. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and add a new column here. We'll call it SSN. Okay, and this table on the left, this is called SSN, and this table on the right is called compensation. Okay, now I'm going to write a VLOOKUP. We already did one of these, but let's go ahead and make and write another example here. And so we're going to say lookup, okay, our current row name. So in this case, John Philippe Bagel. And we're going to go ahead and look it up in this particular case to the social security table. There we go. So we're going to hit tab here and we want to get column two. So column two being social security number. And because this is very important, we get an exact match. We're going to go ahead and use the false argument and we're going to go ahead and click enter. Okay. Now what we end up seeing here, and let's just go ahead and take a look at some of this data here. Only in instances where the name is exactly the same do we actually see a result coming back here. So John Philippe is listed the same in both places. So in fact, we do see a result coming back here. Ming is listed the same in both places. Anne is listed the same in both places. However, Martin, you know, because it's last name first, it returns back pound NA. Pound NA being not applicable. Hey, this person doesn't exist. Same thing with our good friend Jan Costas here. We can see Jan, even though she is absolutely in record table one, because it is not exactly the same, we see that it is returning a pound and egg. There are plenty of instances like this. Names are a good example. Products are another really good example. Addresses, a very good example of this. Okay, so that's the use case. Enter fuzzy lookup. Fuzzy lookup is a way that we can do a lookup between two different lists where the data isn't perfect between them. There's ambiguity. And we could tell Excel, hey, start doing a lookup here, but get me something that's close. Get me something that's 50% the same, 80% the same, you know, and it can ignore things like where the data is reversed, like last name, first name. It can take into account, for example, differences of name. My name, for example, is Stephen Michael Yass Jr. I go by Steve Yass. I go by Stephen Yass, Stephen M. Yass. There's many different variations of this. Fuzzy lookup can look past those different variations and try to match those different items together. Now, unfortunately, this is not a tool that is included by default inside of Excel. You have to add it on. The good news is it's free. It comes from Microsoft. And if you just go and open up your favorite browser, go ahead and search fuzzy lookup inside of Google or Bing. Okay, come on down. Usually the first, second result here, you'll find it from Microsoft. Make sure you get it from Microsoft just so you know you're not getting a bad, you know, something that you shouldn't get. It'll take you over to a Microsoft page and you can just download this particular tool. Okay. Now, when you go to install it, it installs just like any other application. When you go to load it for the first time inside of Excel, it'll say, hey, you sure you want to load up this particular tool? Select yes and restart Excel. And then you will see that particular application added right up into your toolbar. You'll see you have a new menu item called Fuzzy Lookup. Okay. So very simple, easy peasy to get this thing loaded up. Now, the next best practice that I would recommend that you do here is that when you go to go run this, and we're going to run this in this Excel workbook. Okay. We're going to run it over here in column G, is that when you go to run Fuzzy Lookup, make sure that your active cell is not inside of your data. Make sure it's either in a separate workbook or make sure it is to the right of whatever data, because it's going to ultimately override your data if it's in the same place. So just put it to the right of wherever you're working or below or whatever you choose to do. All right, I got to drop my camera here for a second so you can see this taskbar that will pop up. And when we go to add this, again, our cell is in G1 over here. Okay, we're going to see that we get a fuzzy lookup menu that gets automatically added, and that when we click upon it, we'll have some options for us. Okay, now the main prerequisite is your data has to be a table. Secondary prerequisite, make sure your data has a meaningful name. Okay, so we can see here our left table is SSN, our right table is compensation. Now this goes to database logic, left join versus right join, inner join versus outer join, which we're not going to get into today, but CP today, we do have some great courses on databases and we're continuously adding more for accountants. And you can learn the difference between a left join and a right join, but generally whatever's considered more primary should be your left data. Okay, so we choose our two tables that we'd like to work with, and then we can go ahead and choose which columns we want to match on. In this particular instance, we're going to match on name in both of these places, and we would select whatever columns that we would like, in this case, name. And we're going to go ahead and select this, and we'll see it automatically selected this below us. Okay, now we're going to go ahead and then tell it to match. Now we want to get a single match back, and down here is our similarity threshold. Generally, I recommend something between 0.2 and 0.3, which says, you know what, I'll accept something between 20 and 25, 30% different than my original value. So let's go ahead and just set this maybe to about 0.25 and let's go ahead and click go. Okay. And when we do so, it goes ahead and it runs that fuzzy lookup. Okay. Let's hide these other columns because we actually don't need them right now. And let's go ahead and take a look at our results. Now, we actually don't even need here our social security number, and we don't actually need our compensation. So let's hide those results as well. And what we're left with is three columns, our names and our social security. I'm sorry, our name from column A and table A and table B, and then our similarity. And so what we can see here with that fuzzy lookup is that we could see that it found matches. Okay, we have Nancy Fairhafer, Nancy A. Fairhafer. Okay, 94% similar. Andrew Cicini Jr., 94% similar. Jan Costas, Costas, Jan, 100%. It's just an order that is different in that comma, which we know is not really needed. Okay, Maria Shergenko, M. Shergenko, 46% similar, so on and so forth. And so generally, I would say anything with above 80% is considered very reliable, and that's something you can do on. And this is a great tool that you can do when you're working with data that's imperfect. It's not something you can do 100% automated, nor is it something that you would not just completely disregard. Like a VLOOKUP, if it returns a match or index and match returns a match, you know it's rock solid. Here, you might want to give it a good cursory review, but if the data is reasonably well organized, this is going to get you a lot further than manually matching. And this is often a starting point for kind of that initial review. It kind of gets the low-hanging fruit out of the way. And then what we would typically do is probably focus on our stuff below 50%. So over here, Thomas Axon, TG Axon, that's 40% similar, but that's a heck of a lot closer than trying to figure it out on your own. Alrighty. So that is Fuzzy Lookup. It is a free tool that has been added by Microsoft, something that I use quite often that I would recommend that you check out. Okay, so that does bring us to the end of our presentation today. Let's go ahead and switch back and wrap up for the day, and let's have our final review question. Alrighty, which of the following can you do with a table as a source for a pivot table? Okay, which of the following can you do with a table as a source for a pivot table? Okay, so can I build a pivot table from multiple tables? Yes, we didn't have a chance to cover that, but we're going to look at it using data modeling in a future podcast, and we'll talk about some different ways that you can do that. But that's one of the best things that you can do with a table and a pivot table is you can build multiple you could build a pivot table from multiple tables, which is super cool, using relationships. So something to come. We can consolidate multiple tables into one using VLOOKUP, Power Pivot, a couple different approaches. Again, we're going to look at that in our data modeling section. Okay, we can construct pivot tables that use multiple tables for source data. Yes. So the answer here is all of the above. We could do all of these and more with our tables. And again, there's no... Tables add benefit far beyond just kind of the formatting. They are an incredibly powerful and useful tool that make almost every operation in Excel better. All right, so let's go ahead and wrap up. What did we learn today? Well, today we talked about using structured references to write formulas and to reference data inside of our Excel. We saw how easy they are to use and how better they are compared to cellular reference, the R1C1 formula writing style. They're better in every way. We talked about how to use tables as data sources for pivot tables, pivot charts, and even normal charts as well. And we also took a look at Fuzzy Lookup, our way of being able to match data when it is in perfect inside of Excel, which is fantastic for names, addresses, and things where you might have some differences in terms of how that item was written. In future editions and episodes of this podcast, we're going to dive further into data modeling. We've really kind of skirted around that. We haven't gotten really deep in that yet, but we will. So data modeling is fantastic. It's great for large-scale data operations in terms of working with larger quantities of data. It opens up things like Power Query and Power Pivot and more. And we're going to talk about some of those bigger tools as well. All righty. Now, again, if you are a financial professional, you can earn credit for today's broadcast and podcast. It is super simple. All you have to do is go to cpetoday.com, use course code ECX3, take a short 5-question exam, and you can earn a credit for just listening. You'll be well on your way for maintaining your license. Again, check out cpetoday.com for this course as well as many others. We're adding new content all the time. In accounting technology, audit, tax, and others. We're always looking for new materials too. So if you have any ideas for future podcasts or other courses, we'd love to know what those are too and be able to offer those credits to you in the future. If you enjoyed today's podcast, we'd welcome you to connect with us on social media. You can find us on almost all social media at cpetoday.com. We're on Twitter, we're on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and others. We try to post pretty regularly in terms of content and tips and tricks and things and news for the accounting and financial industries. So please, if you like us, consider following us. You can leave us a comment or a review. And we are putting out new content twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays at 11 o'clock live if you'd like to tune in. But you can also listen to us on the platform of your choosing on your time. You can find the CP Today podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and others. Even recently, Pocket Cast as well. We'd love for you to subscribe, leave us a comment or a review. You know, we're a growing business. Anything that we can do to make your continuing education experience more intuitive and fun, we'd love to do so. Just leave us a review and let us know what we can do better. It is my sincere pleasure to always present this material to you. Thank you so much for your time and attention here today. I wish you all the best, and I look forward to seeing you on another podcast soon. Best wishes. Good luck.